Hi, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Toy Harp, a podcast about bluegrass. This is the last episode of season two. Here from Nashville is my conversation with Allison Krauss.
I remember, you know, the first time I looked out in the audience and saw people singing words to our songs that only we had recorded. That was just a really crazy moment. Just never thought it'd end up being there. Never thought we'd hear back from Rounder. Yeah. Never thought we would hear from Rounder in the first place.
If this is your first time listening, you can hear full interviews with Jerry Douglas, Allison Brown, Bela Fleck, Larry Sparks, Jody Stecker, and so many more wherever you get your podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Later on.
And welcome to Basic Folk, a podcast where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. I'm Lizzie No, your host, your boss, your best friend, your ally, and your neighbor.
And your sorority sister.
And I'm here
sister.
With my friend. Excuse me. Someone has interrupted the host.
Sorry.
I'm here with unruly hanger on Cindy House.
That's right. I ride the coattails of Lizzie No. Molly Tuttle, who is the Bluegrass Situation's July 2023 Artist of the Month, is our guest today on the podcast Basic Folk. I also want to say before we get into talking about Molly, sign up for our newsletter, basicfolk.com. You can click on the red sign up button. Lizzie just wrote a really awesome newsletter for us with a great playlist she shared for July. Who knows what's to come in August? You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Basic Folk Pod. Lizzie No is on all social media platforms, not Threads.
I'm not on Threads yet.
I'm not on Threads either. Yeah. And probably going to quit Instagram, but I just can't. There's too many products I need to buy for my cat that I'm being shown on Instagram. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that we're listener supported, so you can make a contribution. Buy a Basic Folk beanie. I know it's July, but the fall is right around the corner. My mom knits these and puts a little Basic Folk tag on them. You can take a look at basicfolk.com in the shop. You can give $5 a month, support the podcast, and you get a really cute, lovely handmade gift. All right.
Speaking of dreams that I had a dream last night, and I'd like for you to interpret it, Cindy. Okay. In the dream, my dad introduced me to Ronald Reagan, and I had to be polite to Ronald Reagan to sort of like, you know, I was like, Lizzie, be cool. Like, don't like call him a demon, even though that's what you think. What's going on there?
I think that dream means that you are going to come into a large sum of money because of Reaganomics.
Oh, it's finally going to trickle down at last.
I have heard recently of Bidenomics.
Ooh.
Yes.
Is Bidenomics where I don't get my student loans forgiven, but they actually find a way to make money trickle down from the ruling class? Is that?
Bidenomics doesn't trickle down. It sprouts up.
Oh, it sprouts up. Oh, so I'm going to be giving money to rich people.
Right. And you reap just what you sow.
Oh, good. I think more people should be coming to us for financial advice.
I am all about the FDC, interest rates.
I had a friend that worked at the Fed, and he said, this was in the Janet Yellen
My
years,
number one concern.
And he said,
oh, sorry.
Let me tell my story about Janet Yellen, Cindy. Apparently, she liked to have a hot dog for lunch in the Fed cafeteria. She was like a hot dog lady.
That's
just like me.
Your Janet Yellen story?
Yeah.
That you were so, struggling to tell is that Janet Yellen ate hot dogs?
She likes hot dogs. That's a fun fact.
The thing that I'm most concerned about when thinking about finances, when are they putting Harriet Tubman on that 20?
Can I say something controversial?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see Harriet Tubman on U.S. currency.
Tell me why.
The reason why is, on a spiritual level, I think it will be weird to like hand over legal tender with her face on it. Like, I feel like that's weird. You know how you're not supposed to throw away a Bible? Like, it's you shouldn't mix things that are that powerful.
Are you saying she's too good?
Am I a witch?
Too good for the 20?
Yeah, she's too good. And also she was a revolutionary, and I don't think that U.S. currency deserves her.
Mm.
Because in the days of slavery, Black people were property, and we were the wealth of the nation.
Oh.
And we were traded. And she was when she freed slaves, her primary crime was that she was stealing property from white people. So I don't like the idea of her then becoming currency.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do see what you're saying. There are other ways to honor Harriet Tubman.
I agree. A holiday. How about make Black history accessible in public schools so kids can actually learn about it instead of suppressing knowledge and banning books?
Reparations
would be dope. Maybe housing for all. And it's called the Harriet Tubman Act. Maybe they close the prisons and it's called the Harriet Tubman Liberation Day. Those are just a few ideas off the top of my head.
I don't know if I've known anyone who's consistently changed my mind on things so fast as I have with Lizzie Ngo.
Cindy, that's a beautiful thing to say because you're a real smart lady.
Well, I'm a nice white lady and I have nice white lady perspectives and opinions.
I would say you are above and beyond a nice white lady, but sure. It's good to keep yourself, have self-awareness and stuff.
Right.
The last thing I'll say about the Harriet Tubman thing is that I had a teacher once who said, access to the empire is not the same as freedom. And that's a saying that I like to live by and I like to use as my North Star when I'm figuring out if something really is progress in my estimation.
I have heard of people who are invited to have a seat at the table.
Mm.
But the people who are invited are your table sucks. Not actually interested.
Yeah, I'd like to eat elsewhere.
We need a new table.
A crowded table.
Oh.
Bringing it back to folk music again.
Lizzie, no.
If that didn't set us up to introduce our guest, I don't know what would.
Maybe quoting a Molly Tuttle song. A crowded table built from a crooked tree.
You can't build a crowded table from a crooked tree because it won't fit into the mill machine. They're left to grow wild and free, Cindy.
Oh, all right. I wasn't paying attention, which is my prerogative. Should we do this? Talk about that old Molly Tuttle?
I would love to talk about Molly Tuttle. I'm a big fan.
Totally. And after listening to this new album, we are even bigger fans. Basic Folk this week is thrilled to interview the Bluegrass Situation's July 2023 Artist of the Month, Molly Tuttle, who is quickly becoming the bluegrass American idol.
So true.
Her new album, City of Gold, is hot off the heels of her Grammy Award-winning 2022 album, Crooked Tree, which also got her a nomination in one of the coveted Big Four categories of Best New Artist. And we know that we've all had eyes on Molly for years, but since she's fully embraced the bluegrass genre on these last couple of albums, Best New Artist makes a lot of sense for Molly. Bluegrass was the music that she grew up with in Palo Alto, California, with her guitar-teaching father helping her soak in the vibrant scene. She's also learning how to take control of the bluegrass narrative by telling her story and sharing her perspective through her new songs. And that rings so true with the new record, City of Gold, co-produced by Tuttle and Dobro master Jerry Douglas of Alison Krauss and Union Station fame, and mostly co-written with her partner Ketch Secor of Old Crow Medicine Show, and featuring her crack backing band Golden Highway. She's writing bluegrass songs that are fun and insightful at the same time. We get a bluegrass version of Alice in Wonderland, the story of a woman fighting for her bodily autonomy, and not to mention that time that she married Dave Matthews on a road trip.
Breaking news!
Breaking news! LOL! JK. But there is a real new song with the real actual Dave Matthews. She digs into her new album, as well as finding her own way in the patriarchal world of bluegrass and leveling up about her alopecia, which is an autoimmune skin disease causing hair loss. Molly Tuttle is a great hang, an inspiration for us all, and has made a fabulous new album, City of Gold. Total Lilas for Molly Tuttle.
Lilas, Molly.
We'll listen to clips of the new album, City of Gold, which is out now. during the interview. So sit back, relax, please enjoy our interview with Molly Tuttle on Basic Folk. Molly Tuttle, welcome to Basic Folk again. It's so great to have you back on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's great to be here with you guys.
Woo, woo! Before we start our interview, I want to set the tone for our conversation. Molly Tuttle is being highlighted as Bluegrass Situations Artist of the Month, which is so awesome. The tone of our interview today is Lila's. Do you know what Lila's is?
No.
It's spelled L-Y-L-A-S.
L-Y-L-A-S. Okay. I don't know that.
What it means is love you like a sis.
Aw, that's so nice.
Yeah. So we are total like Lila's. We are, you know, this is like a fun trip to the mall. This is like, yes, a really fun cruise around the harbor with your gal pals.
Oh my gosh, that's so fun. Well, it's perfect because I'm actually in a hotel outside of Missoula, and there's a strip mall nearby, so shopping has been on my mind today.
Great. We'll all get mani-pedis.
Yes, yes. French tip. Yes.
Together. Yes.
French tip.
Well, let's begin. I'm Cindy, here with Lizzie No.
Hey.
Talking about Molly's new album, City of Gold. So when approaching the writing on City of Gold, you asked yourself, how do I tell my story through bluegrass? Which I can relate to that as somebody who's sort of tried to distance themselves from like folk music for a really long time. And now like I am fully leaning into it. So I take you asking that question of yourself as like, how can I fit my Molly Tuttle-ness into a world that can be rigid, patriarchal, and maybe different from what you stand for? So how true is that? And how have these songs helped you take control of the bluegrass narrative and tradition?
Yeah, I think like that's something I've always kind of struggled with. I remember when I first started writing songs, I just thought like, I don't know how to write a bluegrass song. I can write a song, but they never ended up sounding like bluegrass to me. And I just didn't feel like my story fit into like the bluegrass narrative of the songs that I grew up singing. But I always loved songwriters like Hazel Dickens, who wrote bluegrass songs from a woman's perspective, wrote songs about the struggles that she had as a woman in the music industry and as a working woman, and songs about workers' rights and things she believed in. And then I grew up with two really strong role models, Lori Lewis and Kathy Kallick, out in the Bay Area. And I remember early on, Kathy Kallick, I would go out to her house and she would make me tea and listen to my songs. And she always told me that when she was first getting started writing bluegrass songs, she kind of felt the same way as me, like maybe her story didn't belong in the genre. But she met Bill Monroe and he encouraged her to, you know, don't try to write a song that sounds like a song I would have written. Write a song from your own perspective. And so she wrote a song called Broken Tie about her parents getting a divorce. And she said every time she was at a festival with Bill Monroe, he specifically requested that song. So that was something that that was like an inspiring story to me. But when I started writing songs for Crooked Tree, it was suddenly like a floodgate opened. And I think I just found my people to write with, found my groove, and ended up with a collection of songs that kind of told my story about things I believed in and my family history and personal experiences, and then other songs that were just, you know, from a woman's perspective or from a perspective that I resonate with. And then so for this album, it was fun to kind of continue that and also expand it to be songs that I felt like were inspired by my band members or inspired by experiences we'd had on the road. This felt more like a collective vision in a way.
Okay, let's talk about Crooked Tree. The title track from your last record was partly inspired by your experience living with alopecia. Mm-hmm. And you've said that as a kid, you would wear hats and then wigs, and then you learned to talk about your wig, and eventually you started to get more comfortable going without. Yeah. And now that you're touring with Golden Highway a ton, you sometimes take your wig off when you play that song, which is such a powerful moment of like joy and courage and vulnerability. And as a performer, more I can relate to those moments where, like, you bring a little bit extra of yourself and you share a part of yourself that you might normally keep private. Mm-hmm. And for me, what it takes is really reading the room. Like, do I feel safe with this crowd? Mm-hmm. Does this feel like a gesture or a statement that's going to be received how I want it to be received? So my question is, like, how do you get to that right mood? How do you gauge if the crowd is, like, the right crowd to share about your alopecia experience?
Yeah, well, it's so much based on how I'm feeling. Like, mm-hmm. I took off my wig a few times last year, but, you know, I didn't do it as much as maybe I wanted to, or maybe I should have, mm-hmm. just because I wasn't always sure what to say. Like, I've had so many experiences of trying to explain alopecia to people and they mm-hmm. still think I'm sick or still feel bad for me. And it's so hard sometimes to put it in words that aren't going to bring the mood down at the show. You know, I want people mm-hmm. to be having a good time and I want it to be this fun, inspiring moment, not a moment where people think, oh, I feel so bad for you. And so I recently, last weekend, performed and told my whole story. I did a keynote speech at this alopecia conference out in Denver, Colorado. And I think that was such a important step for me, just getting to share my story and reflect on, like, the pain of growing up having this really visible difference, but also, like, the joy and why it's so important to me to share that with others and share the message that it's okay to be different. It's okay to be a crooked tree. So then this last weekend we played in Michigan and I did take off my wig and I felt like I finally nailed, like, what I said and the perfect mood, and everyone was cheering and it was just a moment of celebration. So I think I'm going to just continue doing that more and more, but I find that it's so helpful for me to just check in with the alopecia community and feel that support from other people who know exactly how I feel. And that makes me feel confident to share my message with the world and, you know, maybe sometimes be like, I don't care how it's received. Maybe it's not, I'm not sure how it's going to be received, but I'm going to do it anyway. And that just comes with time. And I guess I've had to grow kind of a thick skin. It used to be a lot harder for me.
The new album, City of Gold, the songs were mostly written by you and your partner, Ketch Secor. Is that okay to say?
Mm-hmm.
Of Ketch Secor of Old Crow Medicine Show. What is the writing process like with you and Ketch? Like, how do you bring out the best in each other's writing?
It's like we're both quite different writers. He's very, like, fast paced. He throws out ideas and lines and I'm more kind of like, think it over. I'm kind of more internal, think about the lines. So we kind of balance.
Hem and haw.
Yeah. We balance each other out in a way where I might think a lot about, like, what exactly are we saying? And then he's good if I get stuck on something, they just kind of keep it moving. But our writing process is always different. It's nice because we're together a lot, so we can write in a lot of different circumstances. Some of the songs we wrote in the car, like on a road trip, just throwing lines back and forth, and he'd be driving and I'd be writing the lines on my phone, and other songs we wrote just maybe we're talking about something at home or listening to music and sitting down with instruments, kind of more the conventional way of writing. But it's nice because, like, I find it so hard to fit writing into my life, especially when I'm on tour and I'm on the go so much. So we got into a groove with it where we were just doing it all the time and it felt more naturally intertwined into my day-to-day life.
The bluegrass community was a huge source of inspiration for you on this record. Mm-hmm. You said, one of the things I love most about this music is how so much of the audience plays music as well, and that you hope that people will sing along and maybe play those songs with their friends, almost like we're all a part of one great big family. Now, how do you walk the line of making a sophisticated, bitchin' bluegrass record while keeping it simple enough for others who might not be musical geniuses to play along?
Well, I think the beauty of bluegrass music is that you can take a song, like most of the songs have like 3 or 4 chords, mm-hmm. And you can play them really simple. You can just strum along, play it as slow as you want, and beginner bluegrass musicians might go to a jam of people the same level as them and play these songs in a lot simpler of a way. And then as you get better and better, you can, you know, play it faster. You can play more complicated solos. You can really play with the dynamics. And there's infinite ways to kind of make these songs more and more complex and sophisticated as you progress in your musical abilities. On this record, City of Gold, I did kind of stray away from that, you know, three chords and the truth format a little more than I did on my last record. It was fun because we were working up these arrangements as a band, which was a lot different process than I've ever done before in the studio. I've always gone in with my songs, gathered musicians that I don't normally play with on the road, studio musicians, or on Crooked Tree, I had a lot of my bluegrass heroes on the record, and you're learning the songs and playing them to a chart. But for this album, we really took the time to develop more complicated arrangements, add in new sections that strayed away from the key. So these songs are a little less accessible to the standard bluegrass jam, but I think there's still a few that people could learn to play at any level.
100%.
I didn't see a plan for this, but is there a plan to release, I don't know if this is like kosher in the bluegrass community, of like releasing like a tablature book or something?
Oh, I don't have any plans to do that, but that's a great idea. I did actually think about that. I'd love to make kind of like a song book with the chords. That's how I learned to play so many bluegrass songs. My dad is a music teacher, so he has lyric books, he has guitar tab books. And I often would just sit around with the lyric book and flip through and play along to it.
You should just send him the album and say, Dad, I need you to do me a huge favor.
That's not a bad idea.
Write it all down, Dad.
Stoked. Yeah.
Right. And then he writes the foreword. My gosh, we're going to make $1 million.
Wow.
On this idea.
I'll give you guys a cut. Don't worry.
Okay, great.
We'll give you a cut when we write the book.
Oh, okay.
I'm Gold Rush Kate from the Golden State with a nugget around my neck. I keep the red lights burning bright from here to hell and back. I've dug for silver and for gold from Boulder up to Haines. When I hit Coloma, boys, I made my final claim. Across the high Sierras in the spring of 48, and every man with a shovel and pan has stumbled through my gates. Behind these doors, whiskey pours and love and flows like wine. Miners boast to mother loads, they'll dig or else die trying. Eldorado.
Okay, now we're going to talk specifically about some of the songs on the new album, City of Gold, starting with the first song, El Dorado. Right now, I am rewatching Deadwood, so I am like super into this song. Nice. As a kid, you took a field trip to Coloma, the site of California's first gold strike, and it was the first time you heard about the legendary El Dorado, the city of gold. And in the song, you sing El Dorado, City of Gold, City of Fools. And you said, just like gold fever, music has always captivated me. So who are the characters in this song, like Gold Rush Kate from the Golden State? And how do you connect with these fools?
Yes. So I think like this song did come about. Again, I was like, I wrote the song with Ketch, and I don't know how it came about, but I was like, yeah, you know, when I was a kid, every school would kind of send the kids off to the gold country. You'd go to different places. And the person who taught my class how to pan for gold, he just like for some reason I have like a very vivid memory of him. He had this like gold nugget on a chain around his neck, and he kind of like showed us how to pan for gold, and he was like, you might find a flake of gold, but if you find like an actual nugget of gold, we're not gonna let you keep that. You have to give it back to us. And that's just kind of, I remember being like, I really want to find like a nugget of gold and just squirrel it away and not tell this guy about it. So that kind of stuck with me. And then I was telling
literally every kid in your class thought that.
Yeah, I'm like, we're gonna strike it rich at this gold mine. And so we were kind of like doing some research on Coloma and found that it's in El Dorado County. And that seemed like a good place to start with a song, just kind of inspired by, you know, that character, but also thinking about all these characters who came together and we're all trying to strike it rich. And I feel like that is such a theme in our society. You know, we have these like little mini gold rushes, like of everyone being like, this is the next big thing. We're all going to make so much money off of this. But for me, that's always been, you know, I didn't get into music thinking this is going to make me rich, but it is something I've chased after for many years now.
What do you think is the current gold rush? Is it dispensaries, vape stores?
We're going to get there, Cindy.
The thing that just popped into my head, it's a couple of years, maybe like a year past its prime, like cryptocurrency. I don't know where that stands now. I think we're a little bit past that.
I am really glad that I didn't bother to learn what that is.
I barely know what that is either. It was just like everyone talked about it for like a year.
Because I was like, is this going to stick around long enough that I'm going to have to learn about it? Or can I just kind of like wait for it to blow over? And I feel like I'm good on waiting for it to blow over.
I feel like it blew over now. I don't know. I'm not really sure.
I don't know, guys. I just invested in like 100 crypto ATMs. So,
Cindy,
knock on wood for me. I think it's gonna pay off.
I've seen it all, the rise and fall. Now I take my rest. I'm going to rush Pete from the Golden State, and I'm the last one left.
Okay, the second track on this album is "Where Did All the Wild Things Go," which is a song about gentrification's corrosive effect on the character of once vibrant neighborhoods nationwide, which I can very much relate to living in Brooklyn. I'd love to hear about your neighborhood where you live now. Is there a specific tradition or neighborhood institution or restaurant or store that is so special about your neighborhood that you're passionate about preserving? And like, how are you and your neighbors trying to keep your neighborhood weird and wild?
Well, my neighborhood is, I live in East Nashville, and it's, before I got there, it was totally different. It's just in constant flux. It really changed so much when we had the tornado hit that took out tons of the local businesses that never returned. A lot of people moved out, and the pandemic just kind of like sped all of that up. So it feels, coming out of lockdown, I was like, whoa, this is so different. Like, where do I even live anymore? So yeah, I think I don't really know how to answer how I'm trying to preserve it. I feel like I just come back and I'm living in a different city every time I come back from tour, basically. Oh, wow. Nashville's always changing, just constantly growing. So many businesses are moving here. And I do feel like there's this constant sense of like everyone missing the old Nashville. I don't think that I was even around for the like quote unquote old Nashville as many people who grew up in the city know it. So maybe I'm part of the problem in a way, probably. I moved there just 8 years ago, but
I don't think you're the problem. No, if I had to like guess what is the problem with Nashville, I'm not going to even put Molly Tuttle in the top 50.
I would put the longevity bros before Molly Tuttle.
What's that?
Longevity bro. I'm learning so many new things on this podcast.
They're mostly in Austin, Texas.
Oh.
You know, like the Joe Rogan Austin, Texas.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
Oh, the bros who want to like inject other people's blood into them and live
and
forever.
Like live forever.
Oh my God. My girlfriends and I follow like a handful of these men that like only eat like butter and raw bowl testicles. And they are the most weird and fascinating and sad people on the internet.
Okay, I've definitely read articles about this.
Molly, I will DM you some links.
Thank you.
That's great.
Well, I'm from Silicon Valley. So that's like, I feel like that's the heart of the longevity bro movement, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
They went from Peter Pan boys to realizing they actually had to grow up and they're scared to die. So they're creating consciousness in the cloud.
Yeah.
But going back, eternal life through red meat.
Going back to what you're saying, like San Francisco, I feel like is such an example of, you know, it's like a city that was kind of the character for many years was just like, everyone's weird here. Everyone's doing wild things. And now it's definitely changed. But that song was also kind of inspired by like going out on the road and playing these festivals and seeing like people acting crazy and just, you know, all those things you kind of soak in over a festival season. Passed out in a port-a-john is a line that has never personally happened to me, although I do know multiple people who have passed out in porta-potties at bluegrass festivals. So
Molly, that's my nightmare. My worst nightmare is waking up in a port-a-john at a festival.
Yes, I know multiple people who have done that.
No. No.
Where did all the wild things go? Pockets clean, top spin to hatch a pea.
next song we want to talk about is San Joaquin, a new old-style railroad song. There's such a romance surrounding trains in song. You've always loved singing about trains. There is that long tradition of trains and folk songs. What do you think it is about trains that have captured artists' hearts since they've been around?
Well, I think as artists, like as especially as musicians, we kind of have this like roving spirit where we want to see the world, we want to travel. I feel like a lot of musicians, myself included, we kind of romanticize trains as like this early way of getting across the country. And still you'll see musicians from time to time like doing a train tour. And of course you have like buskers who might hop a train across the country and play all over the place.
Don't do it.
I've never done that, but you know, I think it's just this thing that kind of is romanticized, especially by musicians. And train songs, I've always loved singing them. There's so many bluegrass train songs, but I didn't know like a specifically like California bluegrass train song, so I felt like it was time to write one.
What's your favorite train song?
That's such a good question. The first one that popped into my head was Larry Sparks sings this song, I'd Like to Be a Train. And that's just like going, like, he doesn't just want to ride a train. He wants to be a train.
Powerful.
Yes.
Move always straight ahead. I'm going to break some news here on Basic Folk that a lot of people might not know. A true story is that you went on a road trip with Dave Matthews and the two of you got married.
That is 100% true. I can see the tabloids in Bluegrass Today now.
just kidding. But Dave does some amazing guest vocals on Yosemite. What do you like about Dave's voice and what it added to the song? Like, what's the mood and the character that he brings with his vocals?
Yes, well, his voice to me is just, it's a voice I heard as a kid. And so when I hear it, it's just iconic. Like, nobody sounds like him. You can just, I don't know how he does that with his voice. It's like, it's truly like its own instrument. And so it was surreal when he sent the track back and suddenly I heard Dave Matthews singing my lyrics. I was like, what is happening? But it's the song itself is like, it's sad, but it's also kind of supposed to be a little, I don't know, funny in a way. It's supposed to have some sort of humor to it. It's like this road trip gone horribly wrong.
And I think he does. Who among us?
Yes. It was. So I think his, you know, he's kind of like the straight man in a way, and it's kind of like this funny like playing off each other. And I just had so much fun. He sent his voice back and I loved singing along with it and just kind of learning the ways he was making the melody fit his style. It was so cool. And I got to play it with him in Cancun. I went down to Mexico and played his Cancun Beach Festival and sang it with him in the set, and that was just incredible.
I hope I get dream come true. That's amazing. That is so amazing. That's got to be like a bucket list, sing with Dave Matthews.
Yeah, I can't believe what was happening.
I feel like people don't realize how cool Dave Matthews is.
No,
I mean, he's got so many fans, but like, he also started ATO. The thing that I love about Dave Matthews is that he kept making Patty Griffin make music after she was like, I quit.
We really need her.
Yeah, he is such a cool person.
And when my riding days were just coffee in the baggage car, put that reefer in my mouth, spark it up, send us out, riding on the San Joaquin.
Hey friends, you probably know that here at Basic Folk, we are not only podcasters and music fans, but we are also feminists. Folk music feminist Lizzie No is here with an important ask.
Hell yeah, Cindy. Okay, so we can all agree that abortion is healthcare. But if you live in the state of Tennessee, you will need to travel over state lines in order to access that healthcare. It's the worst. I work with an organization called Abortion Care Tennessee, and we are currently raising money so that we can make sure Tennesseans have access to reproductive healthcare in spite of our state's bullshit abortion ban.
There's no better time than right now to fund abortion, especially since the National Network of Abortion Funds is doubling donations between now and May 31st. Just go to abortioncaretn.org and click on the donate button. Then choose the option that says donate for Fundathon.
Thanks for joining the fight for reproductive justice. Abortion forever, no matter what.
No matter what.
Well, this ain't my first rodeo. Been staring down the barrel since I left home. Through the highs and lows and the hurts like hell. Still reaching for the ring on the carousel. I've been down this trail a time or two. Knocked out, fenced in, but I broke through. Life ain't fair and you can't fight it. So take it by the horns and ride it. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
The song Next Rodeo, you say it reflects the miles I've put in with my band, Golden Highway, which has clocked in well over 100 shows. That's like in the press release now. So it's 100 plus shows. It's probably 200 plus shows at this point. And we'll give shout outs to Bronwyn Keith Hines. Let me know if I'm mispronouncing anyone's name.
Correct.
I think hers is the worst. Not the worst. Hers is the hardest.
We have many nicknames for Bronwyn in the band. We saw a YouTube comment on one of our videos where someone was like, I introduced the band. I think it was like our pace session or something. I introduced her and someone said, what's the fiddle player's name? I couldn't catch that. And someone wrote, Ron Winky Pies. So we often will call her Ron Winky Pies. Yes.
That sounds right. Well, she is a hell of a fiddler. Mm-hmm. Also, Dominic Leslie on the mandolin, Shelby Means on bass, and Kyle Tuttle, who is playing banjo. Everybody, for the most part, singing along. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the ease and connection you feel with Golden Highway? And what's the feeling that you get when you're on stage? And when did it start, like, gelling for everyone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so after I made Crooked Tree, I started... I started thinking about who do I want to take these songs on the road with. On the record, you know, I had the band name Golden Highway, but I didn't actually have a band yet. So it's kind of funny. I did it in reverse a little bit. Dominic played on the whole record and I called him and I was like, hey, do you want to play with me next year? And he said yes. So I had one band member. I was just trying to fill in the rest of the band, think like who's going to bring the most personality to this project, who's going to like bring a unique voice. The whole record was all about, you know, kind of being who you are, individuality. So I wanted to choose people who I felt like their personalities really shine through in their music and their playing and their stage presence. And so everyone who I asked said, yes, I got my dream band. And we've all been friends in one way or another for like the past decade. So it was a cool experience. I've never had that before where I like have this band in my head. I imagine the people playing together and then it happens and it's like better than I could have imagined. It felt really cool. In the past, I've had wonderful bandmates, but it's never been this kind of like brainchild where I'm like trying to concoct my dream bluegrass band that I feel like will have this unique personality to it. Yeah, we all got together and everyone already knew each other, had already played together in different configurations just through the bluegrass scene over the years. And so it all kind of started gelling really quickly. And I feel like our first couple shows, we were just kind of like, wow, this is something special.
It really, awesome. Really, really is. I saw you guys, what was it, last month in Arkansas? It is like a magical golden connection, this band.
Bottom on the well. Woke up in a dream with a curious habit, chasing a little white rabbit.
I want to ask you about Alice in the Bluegrass, which is such a cool, fun, far out song. It, basically, for our audience, it is Alice in Wonderland, but it takes place in Kentucky. There is cornbread that says eat me, there's a toadstool fiddle, etc. So A fun fact that Cindy told me is that you played the Queen of Hearts in your school play, and also in 2020, your band covered Jefferson Airplane's White Rabbit, and
yes.
You were the Queen of Hearts in that costume yes. arrangement.
Yes.
We're curious, what is your connection to the Queen of Hearts? Because maybe the natural choice would have been to dress as Alice, as the band leader. What is the spiritual connection between you and the Queen of Hearts, and what does she represent in this music?
When I was in eighth grade, I went to this school where it was kind of like a hippie school. Like, people came barefoot. There was mm-hmm. our music teacher, like, played bluegrass jams and played in local bluegrass jams. So I kind of he always, like, started this, like, bluegrass band at the school. And anyway, it was just like a very kind of like chill, like laid back vibe at the school. So we always, every year the kids would vote on which play you wanted to put on. And my class voted to do Alice in Wonderland. And I started reading the book. It became like one of my favorite books at the time. And my best friend played Alice in the play. And I...
Okay, power couple.
I was thinking, who do I want to play? And I thought the Queen of Hearts was like the next coolest, if not like the coolest one to play, because you get to be mad, you get to yell. And I was kind of reserved as a kid. It was like not in my natural wheelhouse, but I'm not saying I'm like a great actor by any means. That's the only time I've ever like acted in my life. But I somehow tapped into this like this maniacal like Queen of Hearts persona yes. for the play. I'd be like, oh,
she's your Sasha Fierce.
Yeah, so that's like my alter ego.
Wait, did you do the play or did you do the musical? Because I was in the Alice in Wonderland musical in fifth grade.
That's super cool. I didn't know there was like, well, I know there was music in the movie, but
the music is really trippy.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Lizzie, do you want to reveal who you were?
Yes, I was Tweedledee.
Oh,
and I had like, I was like, my costume was like completely round. And so I would just like bump into people and I got to do the funny songs and be goofy.
That sounds so fun.
Oh, it's the best.
The year before in seventh grade, we did Dracula, which was a lot darker. And it was all, there were not many parts for the girls. Like the guys got all the good parts. So then we did Alice in Wonderland and the guys all of a sudden decided, oh, we want to dress in drag and do all the girl parts. So the guy who did Dracula tried out for Alice, his friend tried out for the Queen of Hearts, and so me and my friend were like, we're gonna,
yeah,
the class got to vote on who gets which part, so we were like, we're gonna like beat these guys. Like, we practiced every day, so I got so good at screaming off with your head, and then when we did it we both got voted as the part, so it was very triumphant.
Oh my gosh, dude. I feel like that's the only instance I've ever heard of drag being like a way of like a pro male chauvinist
oppression.
Drag. Like I normally yeah. very much support drag, but this was not, that doesn't seem right.
We had to invent fake parts for the girls to be in Dracula. I had like one line and I was just this like sexy vampire girl, but
they say beware of stranger things, what lies behind the looking glass.
Is there an Alice in Wonderland reference in Stranger Things too, with the looking glass?
Yes, that's why we put those two songs next to each other. So yeah, I guess Alice in the Bluegrass came about, I'd covered White Rabbit in a live stream I did in the pandemic, and then we decided to work it up in the bluegrass band and dressed in Alice in Wonderland costumes last year. And we did that because I had this song, Alice in the Bluegrass, that I'd written mm-hmm. after I'd learned White Rabbit. I'm like, I should write like the bluegrass version of White Rabbit. So we thought it would be fun to kind of hint at it last Halloween. And then I had that song, Stranger Things, which was actually probably the first song I wrote that ended up on this album. I wrote it not thinking like this is going to end up on a bluegrass album. It was just kind of this like spooky song that I'd written. I didn't know when I was going to record it, but I thought it would pair really well with Alice in the Bluegrass, just one kind of like going into the other. It's kind of like the darker side
yeah. of the song. Lizzie and I were talking about the record, and the A side is so different from the B side. Like, I feel like this is the song that marks, like, okay, we're going to get goth.
Yeah.
At I felt this like, point in the record. Yeah, the B side, you're going down the rabbit hole.
Oh, I love that.
Oh,
I love that.
We did want to ask a question about, on Stranger Things, Jerry Douglas, mm-hmm. who co-produced the record with you and is the master of the dope row. How do you write for somebody who is so masterful in his instrument? And more importantly, how has your relationship with him as a producer shaped how you think about your own recordings?
On this record, it was like, especially on Stranger Things, I just like felt like I needed to hear him play on it. We had this funny thing we'd say in the studio, like, make us Akis. So make us Alison Krauss in Union Station, because they're like our heroes. And so when we got to that song, we're like, we need that iconic, yeah. like Jerry Douglas dobro part. It's such a like spooky song. And he just knows how to accompany like a song so well. And that's part of why I felt like he was the dream producer, because he understands like the kind of like musicianship side of things. He's such a master of his instrument, but then he also has this like deep connection to songs and vocalists, and just knows exactly what to play behind a vocal. So that's something I really kind of leaned on him for, is just getting the best performance out of everyone instrumentally. He can hear, like, he has just the greatest ear. He hears a pitchy note here or like a wrong note there, and really pushes everyone to do their best performance. But then he also has this side of him that's like extremely tasteful and knows how to get behind a song and not overpower it.
The record he made with John Hiatt, was it last year or the year before? It was like so stunning.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, I love that album.
Love that.
What lies behind the looking glass is not always as it seems. And once you're gone, you can't return. There's a big change coming to the south, and you know we got a modern way of living, but there's room to grow.
I want to talk about Down Home Dispensary, which is such a fun song. And I'm fascinated by the way you've framed this issue, which is like very hot in the news, like legalizing marijuana. The way it's framed in Down Home Dispensary is as like a very fun political pitch about how Southern culture can evolve and is evolving. Mm-hmm. So why did you feel it was really important to frame this as a Down Home Dispensary? And do you notice an evolution in the way that Southerners and your audiences more broadly are relating to marijuana use?
Yeah, well, I think like the South is still kind of the holdout, like it's not legal most places in the South. But I feel like it's become like such almost a bipartisan issue where people are getting behind it. We play it, we've been playing it live, and people just like are cheering, no matter who they are, they're like cheering for the Down Home Dispensary, because it's just kind of like, it's this thing that's become kind of normalized in our society, but it still is technically not legal a lot of places down south. That was one that Ketch and I originally wrote to be an Old Crow song, and then they didn't cut it, and I was like, I'm gonna show it to my band, and they're like, we have to do this song, it's so much fun.
And it's sort of like a bookend to Big Backyard, of like, the whole world can be your down home backyard.
Totally.
We can make home and freedom anywhere.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it was just, it's funny, like I thought it was like a funny angle too, to go about it. You're talking to a politician just being like, you should really do this because you're going to make a lot of money. Like, this is in your best interest.
Yes.
Down Home Dispensary in Tennessee. Goodbye, Mary, I must go where I'm bound. I don't know. Here's a ticket and my mother's golden ring. Golden ring.
to keep talking about politics a little bit, going into Goodbye Mary, which is probably my favorite song on the album.
Oh, thank you.
It picks up on that thread and that through line of independence that you talk about throughout your catalog. Mm-hmm. But Goodbye Mary, to me, reads like a really dark story of freedom and captivity. Mm-hmm. And, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe a woman's quest for freedom and bodily autonomy through abortion.
Yeah.
That's like one angle. Is that what you intended with the song?
Mm-hmm.
So how has living and working in Tennessee changed how you see your responsibilities as a feminist artist?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely like I'm confronted with things in Tennessee that I never imagined would happen, where I lived. Like, abortion is not legal in Tennessee mm-hmm. at all. It was like one of the first states to basically ban it for any reason. Right. And that was really like a dark moment in our history as a country to just like be going backwards completely. It's something that I've feared since I like was a teenage girl. Like, what if this got taken away and what if I couldn't mm-hmm. make decisions for my body? And now basically I can't in the state where I live. I could maybe travel somewhere else if needed, but who knows, right. they could make it more and more impossible to have access to this. And it just breaks my heart for all the people who now don't have that choice and don't have the privilege of being able to go somewhere where they can get this health service. And I was thinking, like, my mom told me this story growing up of my grandmother, whose name was Mary. And she had a friend who was in an abusive relationship mm-hmm. and she wanted to leave this relationship, but she ended up getting pregnant. And so my grandmother and her friend, she would push her friend down the stairs. They would try anything to get rid of the baby. And it's a really dark story, but it's somewhere that we're going again as a nation. So that song, when we were writing it, we were talking about my grandmother and, that's not something that happened to my grandmother personally, yeah. but it's, you know, something that her generation had to deal with.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's so important to link abortion access to, like, women's experiences of mm-hmm. intimate partner violence. I think a lot of people yeah. who claim to be pro-life don't want to admit that access to mm-hmm. abortion is also access to freedom.
Yes.
You know, and the ability to leave an abusive situation. And mm-hmm. it's just one more way of, like, actually having freedom in your own body. That's mm-hmm. like a really powerful story.
Yeah.
Hmm. I went to a concert the other night and there was a woman wearing this awesome t-shirt. It says, "I will aid and abet abortion."
Yes. I'm going to do a plug on the podcast. I'm joining the board of Abortion Care Tennessee.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just so important, I think, for musicians to be talking about this issue, especially mm-hmm. those of us that live in Nashville or work in yeah. country and folk and bluegrass.
Yeah, it's really scary to talk about. I was so scared to put that song on my record, and Jerry yeah. was the one who was like, "We have to. This is like one of," it was his favorite song. He mm-hmm. was like, "If we're going to record one mm-hmm. song, it needs to be this one." And I was like, "I'm scared. Like, this issue is one I care about so deeply, and it's like one of the most important like social issues to me, but it's also like you get kind of like the most backlash for it yeah. in a way." Mm.
Have you played this live yet?
We haven't. No, we've worked it up, and once the record's out, I think we will start playing it, but we haven't tried it live yet.
You got this.
Thank you.
Yeah, totally.
Thank you. Thank you for like telling this story. I think that like the bluegrass community needs to hear it and the world needs to hear it. I think it's really Thanks. Important.
On her grave, put pretty flowers on her grave. Will you put pretty flowers on her watching Golden State upon the silver screen, the first time I fell in love. Second Saturday of July in the parking lot, a Pally High, the first time I fell in love.
With The First Time I Fell in Love, all I want to know is, are you a dancer? And like, can you describe the ideal party or dance floor where you would play this song? Because this is the one that, like, physically moved me the most.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, it's like it's in 3/4 time, so it's kind of a waltz one. I feel like it would be fun to play at, like, a wedding or something, like some really romantic setting, even though it's not about, like, romance with a partner per se. But I actually played it last weekend at the Alopecia conference I was at, and that might actually be my favorite place to play it, because I played Crooked Tree, and then I was like, I'm going to play a new one now, and I played that one, and it felt really special. I felt, like, connected to the lyrics there in a way that I hadn't really before when I've sang it before, and it was just cool to see those little kids out there, the little bald kids. They're so cute, and just thinking, like, they're having a really similar experience to me growing up. They might be struggling with loving themselves just like I did, and so that was a really special place to get to perform the song.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Come when on. You're playing at the Alopecia conference, you have your wig off?
Yeah, it's like, it's fun because nobody wears their wigs. Well, some people do. It's a very judgment-free zone. So if you're wearing a wig, that's cool. That's great. If you're not wearing a wig, that's cool. A lot of people, myself included, we don't wear our wigs all weekend. And then on the last day, you see everyone putting their wigs back on to go to the airport because it's hard to travel with wigs in your bag.
But yeah. Whoa, I've never thought about that.
Yeah, they need to invent, like, a good way to store wigs without getting them all messed up on flights. But yeah, it always is something where when I can make the time to go to it and, like, clear off a whole weekend to be there and be around other people with alopecia, it always just kind of, I feel like I level up, and then maybe the next whole year, I feel, like, more confident talking about it, more confident taking off my wig at a show, and sharing my story. So it's always an important thing for me to do.
Okay, let's talk about the fashion of Molly Tuttle.
Wow.
On the cover of City of Gold, you are wearing this extremely stylish sequin suit and these beautiful cat eye glasses. You've got a rad Western inspired glittery outfit in the music video for Next Rodeo. You were wearing a beautiful black Winnie Couture gown, kind of like reminiscent of, like, Loretta Lynn at the Grammys. It's happening. It's all happening. So what is going on with the fashion of Molly Tuttle these days, and what has been the evolution?
Yeah, well, I've always loved clothes, but I don't. Naturally, I haven't always naturally had a great sense of fashion. But yeah, in recent years, I've gotten to know, like, my suit on the album cover was loaned to me by this wonderful Nashville designer, Any Old Iron. And he makes these incredible suits. They're all so sparkly. It's like your dream. It's my dream stage wear. So he loaned me a bunch of sparkly suits for my album cover shoot. So shout out to Any Old Iron. And Laura Citron, she also is a Nashville designer who I wore some of her clothes for my shoot too. The sparkly suit is Any Old Iron, but they kind of have this store in Nashville where you can check out both their clothes. And yeah, our friend Sam styled our next rodeo shoot, and she was kind of going off that, the aesthetic from the album cover of the sparkly kind of Western inspired outfits. She had a wonderful collection of vintage clothes she brought to the shoe, and
did she style the whole band?
She did. For that was our first time working with her.
That's so fun.
Yeah, it was very, very fun. And also, like, me and Bronwyn and Shelby in the band, we have gotten really into, like, coordinating outfits, and Shelby's kind of like our style guru. She'll have the ultimate say, like, yes, these are the good outfits for the show. So we talk clothes all the time when we're off the road. We're sending each other pictures of, should I buy this? What should I wear for the next tour? And we've gotten Dom and Kyle on board too. So now they'll text us before a tour and be like, what's the Luke for this run? They know the spelling now, L-E-W-K. So
very good.
On this topsy-turvy, wild and whirly, in a hurry, full of worry, roller coaster ride, the first time you fell in love with yourself.
Cindy, do you want to stun and scare Molly with some really fun lightning round questions?
Oh God!
You know I do. It's the lightning round, Molly Tuttle. Woo woo woo! Okay, here we go. You have no choice. You're doing it.
Oh God,
Molly Tuttle. What is the best Alice in Wonderland movie?
I've only seen the Disney version.
Okay.
I'll go with that one, I guess.
That's acceptable. That's a very good one.
Isn't there like a... There's like the live action one that's quite creepy.
There's a live action one with Johnny Depp.
Yes, I have.
Can we bleep him? Can we bleep his name on the bottom? I don't want to promote
Johnny Depp. One that I would point you towards is the one from like the 80s/90s. I don't know what year it came out, called Through the Looking Glass.
Okay.
With Phyllis Diller and Linda Ronstadt and Ringo Starr. There's all these crazy cameos.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will be watching.
My family
tonight.
Taped it off TV. It's like very scary, but you're going to love it. I can't
wait. That sounds incredible.
Anyways.
Okay. Where is your favorite place to ride a train to?
I think West Coast. Like when I was a kid, we went on this train trip up to Seattle, and that was super fun. Mm-hmm. I just love seeing the coast. There's this steam-powered train in Santa Cruz that you can ride. It's very cool. You go through the redwoods.
Whoa, that sounds awesome, actually.
Beautiful.
All right, in thinking of all of this city of gold, gold diggers, gold prospectors, Molly, what is something you really want to have gold plated?
Gold plated. That's such a good question. You know, I feel like a gold plated guitar case.
Ooh.
It might be dangerous on the road, might get messed up, but it would just be so baller.
They could do that lightweight.
Yeah.
You know?
Because I was going to say you would also need to add an extra employee to your crew to carry
it. Yes, I would not be carrying that.
No. Mm-hmm. Who is your guitar hero?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. My ultimate is Dave Rawlings. I love his playing.
What is your favorite studio snack?
Those Justin's peanut butter cups. Those are really good.
Ooh.
I want one now. I want
Me
one
too.
Even now.
Me too.
What's the best way to pass time on the road? Assuming you're not driving.
I like to listen to podcasts a lot because I'm not staring at my phone. I also get car sick if we're in a van or if we're on the bus and the bus is moving. I can't really read, sadly. So podcasts or audiobooks is good. Well, I just finished that book, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, on audiobook, and that was
so good.
It was so good. I'm trying to alternate between a book that's hard to read and I feel like it's making my brain work, and then a really fun book. That was more of a fun page turner. And then the podcasts I listen to, this is embarrassing, but I listen to Bachelor and Bachelorette podcasts a lot. I'll watch
that
the show.
Is not embarrassing at all. In fact, we might need to have you back for a special episode to talk
yes,
about.
Yes, that would be so fun. Is this becoming a Bachelor podcast now?
Bachelor Nation.
Yes. I listened to this one, Game of Roses, where they talk about it like it's a sports game, and they have all this terminology they've invented.
Oh my God. All right, next question. Where is the most beautiful place in the world?
Big Sur.
Ooh.
And finally, what city in America has the best weed? Asking for a friend.
I'm going to give a shout out to the city that I put in, San Joaquin, Humboldt County.
Woohoo!
All right, Molly Tuttle. You've reached the end of the lightning rounds and subsequently the end of the interview.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. This was very fun. Thanks for having me.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by John Nungesser. Alex Stanton composes our music. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation podcast network, which, what is it, Lizzie?
Lila's. Love you like a sis.
You can find all of our episodes there, wherever you get podcasts. You can search for us on the SiriusXM app under Basic Folk, or you can check out basicfolk.com.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening all the way to the end.
Bye.
We'll talk to you next time. Bye.